Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the hot block commander.
How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hour show and keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Roll with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26 or the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with 5 nights at the round table. 5 Philly guys, diversified and educated.
All right, good evening, sports fans, and welcome once again to another edition of Sports Crack Radio. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you, of course, by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and sitting here with me at the War Room Roundtable are your pushers, Akil Bayon. What up?
What up, Dev?
Jimmy Williams. What up, Jimbo?
What's up, cuz?
And we got B. Austin and Paul Johnson going to join us in a little while. Tonight, we're going to discuss all the wild stories in sports this week, but our main focus in the second hour will be international professional ball players and our overseas ballers segment. We'll be talking with Lou White out of D.C. and Voorhees College, David Knowles from Plano, Texas and Pitzer College, Jared Stevens out of Ferndale, Michigan and Penn State University, and Mike Jordan out of Philly and the University of Pennsylvania. As usual, we want to hear from you guys tonight, so call in and holler at us when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline. That number is 323-410-0012. Quick shout-out before we get started. Check out our homies Roy and Chris on the Broad Street line every Wednesday at 6, and every weekday at 1, join Drew on Buzz on Broad. Catch both of these great shows right here on Blog Talk Radio. So peace to the fellas, but right now, the Blueprint got some birthday shout-outs.
My birthday, yay!
What's up, everybody? The birthdays, of course, are brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon, 9221 Oxon Hill Road in Fort Washington, Maryland. Go get your wig split. Anyway, you guys, you ready to jump into the birthdays for the week?
Let's get it, sir.
Yo, the first birthday, I want to go first. This dude is Ralph Lee Sampson Jr., who turns 51. Yo, and here's what I want to say about Ralph Sampson. When I personally think of Ralph Sampson, I think of my comrade Akil Bayon on the line with us right now. And I'm going to tell you why. Yo, back when we was young boys and we used to play ball up Mallory, Finley, shout out to everybody uptown. You know, that used to be on the playground. Everybody was Jordan, Barkley, Magic. Kill come down on the court talking about, I'm Ralph Sampson. And everybody look at him like he was crazy. Like, Ralph Sampson? Yo, whose name's Ralph Sampson on the playground? But that was Kill the man. And he had a game. Anyway, that's what I think of. Dev, what about you?
When I think of Ralph Sampson, I automatically think of the Twin Towers, you know, Ralph and Hakeem Olajuwon. That's back when his name was Hakeem instead of Hakeem. I don't know why he changed it. But, yeah, the Twin Towers, they were going to be a force to be reckoned with in the league, but Ralph Sampson and his injuries kind of prevented Houston from having that 1-2 Twin Towers punch that had so much promise, man. Injuries, man.
And Doc Bay, I know this is your man. What you got to say about Ralph Lee Sampson Jr.?
Yo, I was hyped when I saw that his birthday was coming up, and, yo, I think he was actually way before his time. Had he come along maybe like now or not had the injuries, I mean, he could have easily been an NBA Hall of Famer. I mean, his rookie year, he averaged 21 points, 11 rebounds, then 22 and 10, then 19 and 11, and then that's when the injury started taking place. And he was actually one of the few teams that actually put the Lakers out of the Western Conference Finals. Like, everybody was always used to the Lakers going to the finals. Go ahead.
That was a lucky shot, man.
Yeah, so it's like everybody, and even now that shot goes down in history because it's like, yo, somebody else beat the Lakers. You know, the Lakers didn't make it to the finals that year. So, yeah, I guess he was clutch in the fourth quarter. But, yo, he was 7'4" and could, like, handle the rock and shoot and pass and rebound and play D and get blocked. So he was, you know, he's like the Euro players you have now, but, you know, he was more of a defender. So shout out to Ralph Sampson.
All right, let Kill get off on talking about his man. But, yo, let's move on. The next birthday is Lisa Deshaun Leslie Lockwood, better known as Lisa Leslie. Turned 39. Damn, I didn't know she was that old. Lisa Leslie turns 39. Kill, what you got on Lisa Leslie?
Yo, she, I guess you could say she's like the pillar for the WNBA. You know, she was a female. She was a model. She could dunk. She was like 6'5". You know, played defense. You know, scored, did all that. Like, she's kind of like, you know, the it girl for the WNBA while she played.
Yeah. Dev, what you got?
Tatonk it.
Lisa Leslie. No, Kill, he gave you all the attributes and the on-court stuff. But, you know, for a chick that tall, and, you know, we don't expect giant chicks to also be so feminine. You know, she's a nice-looking lady. You know, I ain't going to go to B. Austin right here for the ignorant spewing, but,
yo,
you know, I keep a respect for her. She's a nice-looking lady, nice little tree that I know a lot of dudes wouldn't mind climbing.
I heard that.
I'm mad. The brother played me out.
Austin's in the building. What you got?
I gotta save
something
for you. Go ahead, Lisa Leslie.
In anticipation, the giggles begin. No, I respected her. I didn't like the little comment she made that she would get off in the NBA. No, you would not. But yeah, she had her moments. Sometimes I looked at her and she looked like Chris Bosh's sister, and then other times I looked at her and she held her own. She's a good looking lady. She's no Swin Cash.
Got you. All right. Next birthday. Michael Westbrook. That's actually Michael Dianello Westbrook, who turns 39.
My birthday, yay!
Dad. You got on Michael Dianello Westbrook.
Michael Westbrook, former receiver for the Washington Redskins. The most memorable thing he's ever done in his career was snap out in practice and beat the living snot out of his running back, Steven Davis. I forgot why it happened. I think he called him a maggot with an F or something like that. And dude just jumped on him, just dove on him. But he beat him up like a little brother. You know how, like, even if you're the older brother or the little brother, you know this. When the older brother gets you on the ground, puts his knees on your arm so you can't move, and then beat the snot out of you, that's what he did to this grown man. And I've never looked at Steven Davis with any sorts of respect after that incident. And that's all I got to be on my bro.
That's the only thing that probably all of us will say, because when I think of the boy, I think of, you know, Steven Davis calling the boy Andrew Beckett. And then he basically just he thrashed him at that point. Yeah, he thrashed him.
No one cares that the dude had pretty decent talent as a wide receiver. No one cares about his combine numbers. All we talk about is the fact that a wide receiver beat up a tailback. That don't even sound right.
And he's not.
That don't even.
Davis wasn't a little tailback. It wasn't like he.
No, he like 240. Now Michael Westbrook was a big ass receiver. He was like 220, but that still should happen.
I think he knew some kind of martial arts too.
Yeah, no, he now. Oh, Jimmy, you should have known this. Now he's a mixed martial artist, and his record actually is he practices Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And he actually, I believe,
his record
has
Steven
one
Davis
win, one, one win, one loss, and one draw.
I guess he can't fight unless somebody calls him a Beckett. Yo, Doc Clay, what you got to say?
I think he is. I actually think he is a Skittle. I heard that.
Yo, didn't he make that catch from Cordell Stewart? That 75-yard game, Colorado, they upset somebody at the last minute. Remember that?
If you're being accused of being a Beckett, you don't want to catch nothing from Cordell Stewart either.
Yeah, but yo, that I mean, not to start rumors, but I heard stuff, you know. I heard stuff with him, you know. But, yeah, that's all I remember.
No, we don't know. You tell us.
In that game. No, I mean, I just heard, you know, people have rumors about Cordell. People have rumors about Westbrook. And then, you know, some people put the two and two together. Pause. But other than that, he was a solid receiver. I think he went below his talent level in terms of never being. I think at one point, you know, they didn't know if he would even catch the rock when he was open with the Redskins. But he had immense talent, but he didn't live up to it.
He had a 1,000-yard season, and it's funny because in the whole career he only had 4,000 yards. So what did he do the other season?
Exactly.
Tripping, cuz. Anyway, last one is the RIP shout out, and that's to my man, Jigga with the strong arm like Satchel Paige. Anyway, Leroy Robert Satchel Paige, who was born July 7th, 1906. Rest in peace, good brother. And that will conclude the birthdays.
Birthday.
Dev, tell everybody what happened while they were on the grind.
All right. Tell everybody what happened today and this week while y'all were on the grind. This is brought to you by PhillyAutoDesign.com. Get your rim and tire game right. All right, guys know this happened late last week, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it then. Your boy Mikey is reunited with Nike. So, Bayon, Mike Vick is re-signed with Nike, and actually this is the first time in history that a professional athlete is dropped by an endorser and actually re-signed by him. So you think it's deserved, Kill? You think he earned it
back? I wouldn't say necessarily earned it or didn't earn it, but at the end of the day with Nike, it's all about the money. I mean, Phil Knight is like, what can I do to make money? It's either going to be sweatshops or star players. So, yo, he's hot, right? When he was down, we're going to drop him because we're going to lose money, and then when he's hot, we're going to sign him right back again. So I could see Nike doing this more times. Like, I can see Nike doing this five more times. Like, let's say he does dogfighting again, gets locked up, they'll drop him, then he gets out and gets MVP candidacy, they're going to sign him. I mean, Nike's about the bottom line, so there you go.
Right, so basically you're saying this is not really about anything that Mike Vick did or didn't do to earn back his endorsement. It's basically the hypocrisy of Nike.
Exactly.
Because it probably doesn't matter as long as he's still – popular, it doesn't matter what kind of dude he is. They would have still, you know, given him his money back. Austin, what you think about it?
I'm going to mirror what the brother said. I mean, yo, it's the bottom line. But I think something's really funny. Yo, what would the meeting be like when you're like Michael Vick and you come back in the room and they're like, yeah, we know we dropped you and we left you high and dry when you went, you know, you went in. We didn't write you no letters, send you no kites, but, yo, now that you're out, like, you're a boy again.
Hey, what do you think? Mike was like, you damn right. He need that money. You know, he got some creditors that he need to pay back. Jimmy, what you think about that?
Man, I think that it is hypocrisy. If I was him, I wouldn't have took the deal. He probably could have got the deal somewhere else, but they didn't stick behind you when I'm all about loyalty, so FOH to their swoosh. Unless they want to cut us a check, of course.
I don't believe in loyalty in sports, but that's just me. I don't think it really has a place in sports because, like y'all said, you know, especially now with so much money involved, it's a business.
If it don't make dollars, it don't make sense.
It's all about that.
I guess I'm old school. But at the end of the day, if Nike wants to cut a check, I will be loyal.
Right. It's all about that Randy Moss.
Straight cash, homie.
All right. So another story. This is a sad one, especially for some Sixers fans, some Nets fans. Armen Gilliam died the other day. He died at age 47. He was playing a pickup game in a health club. That just don't even sound right. You die playing a pickup game at a fitness club. That's crazy. So RIP to Armen Gilliam. But what do y'all remember about Armen the Hammer Gilliam?
Yo, well, first of all, I think of Armen Gilliam.
He's definitely winning the chip now.
Rudy! Yo, I think of that haircut, yo. He had the worst haircut in the history of life.
The Gumby?
Yo, that wasn't no Gumby. That was
Slumby.
A
Slumby.
You know who he looked like? He always looked like, to me, he always looked like EST, Zach Nicholas once.
Zach Nicholas once?
Yeah, he
once.
Does.
Ow.
EST had bars, though.
Yeah, but what Brad
was... EST was nice.
What B. Austin was talking about earlier is when Barkley was like, when he came to the Sixers, Barkley was like, yeah, we're going to definitely win the chip now. We got Armin Gilliam. But, I mean, I can see why he was excited back then. Armin Gilliam was a hell of a player in college. You know, he was the best player on a Final Four team back in 87 at UNLV. Most of the other guys on the team, unless you're a basketball purist, you probably won't be able to name them. So, Bam, what do you think about the death of Armin Gilliam?
Yo, that's sad, man. I mean, he was trying to get some cardio, and then he died. I'm sure he probably had that enlarged heart disease that a lot of athletes tend to have sometimes, where it's like there's nothing they can do about it, you know, which is why you have all the EKG scans and all of that, which is the reason why Ketanji Mobley had to stop playing
right.
from his EKG. But he still hoops. From what I hear, he still hoops, like, for pickup, but I guess he can't do an 82-game season. But,
yeah, right.
Yeah, that's
NBA hard.
Yeah, but that's sad, man. That's a sad story.
Yeah. So RIP again to Armin Gilliam. Armin the Hammer Gilliam. All right, next
Armin
story.
Armin the Hammer.
Gilliam. Jeter. Derek Jeter is back. He came back Monday. Started out, you know, he's on his quest for 3,000. He came back Monday on the 4th of July and had an 0-for, went 0-for-4. But he's picked it up since then, and today he stands about three hits shy of 3,000. This is what surprises me about this whole thing. As great of a history that the New York Yankees have and all the players and legends and Hall of Famers that they have down in Yankee lore, you know, they don't have any 3,000-hit ball players. Jeter will be the first Yankee to ever hit 3,000, to get 3,000 hits. Did y'all know about that?
Nah. I didn't even know that. Yo,
yeah,
shout out to Pete Rose, because as much as a big fuss they're making about Jeter hitting 3,000, my man Pete Rose hit over 5,000, and that's, like, crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that is crazy. But, yeah, Jeter's already the leading, he's the all-time leading hitter for the New York Yankees. And,
yo, I hate to make this about Pete Rose, and so I won't, but I didn't realize, I forget that Pete Rose has 5,000 hits. Yo, let that man in the hall, man.
Pete Rose.
My question to you and the rest of the illustrious Joint Chiefs of Staff is, with Jeter being the face of the franchise, is this more about loyalty to him, merchandising, having him in the lineup? Because I think it's accepted across the board that he's not the best option at shortstop. So, like, is it just about the history? What is it about?
I mean, with A-Rod on your team, I don't know, you know, since A-Rod got there, I don't know if he's ever the best option at shortstop. But Jeter is clutch. Jeter is dependable. So, you know, I don't know. I think his career, anything that happens after this 3,000th hit, you know, it may start to go into that territory of, you know, the Yankees are just showing him respect, yada, yada, yada. But, I mean, like we talked about last week and the week before, man, you can't deny his greatness. So, you know, every time you think you're off, he does something else to show you that he's Derek Jeter. So, I don't know. I don't know what the other options would be besides
never moving. Been 37.
Yeah. And I heard somebody say the other day that age is undefeated. But that's kind of a flawed theory too, because they'll say that about somebody who's 37, and then when the dude's still balling at 40, you know, at some point you have to be right if you use that quote. At some point you're gonna retire. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know.
Not if you're Benjamin Button, a.k.a. Grant Hill.
Well, Benjamin Button, since he gets younger, he is going to turn into a baby on the field. So that ain't going to work after a while either. But last story of the grind, just, you know, a quick one. We've been speaking about Tiger Woods for the last 3 weeks. He has pulled his name out of the British Open, so he won't be playing in that. So that's one more tournament that he misses. That's one more obstacle in the way of him getting those four majors he needs to catch Jack Nicklaus. You got any thoughts on Tiger not going to the British? He says he'd rather be 100% before he gets back onto the golf course. You know, with
I
him
think
on that?
He should take his time and get right. You know, cause, I mean, because he's a shell of himself. You know, he's like Superman without his powers in the movie. Take
right.
your time and get right and come back when you're ready.
Yeah.
Let me ask y'all this. Yo, he has a degenerative condition. Is he ever going to get right?
See, that's a very good question. Because, on one hand, I keep thinking that Tiger will – you know, like regain, not regain the dominance that he once enjoyed, but I was thinking he would probably regain the number one golfer in the world title at some point. But
I'm with you.
It is degenerative, so it's like, you know, rest is the best thing for him, but he can't rest forever if he still wants to be.
You got
to
play it.
Yeah, so that's a very good question, and I can't answer it. Maybe we have to get the ladies of Optimal back on so we can see
what we're going to talk about. Oh, we should have asked. Yo, I'm with you. I had questioned when people was like, yo, is he going to win a major this year? I was like, yo, y'all is silly. Get out of here. Of course he's going to win like five. Now I'm like, yo.
Will he ever win one again?
You took the toots away. Is he ever going to win again? Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Hey, Dev, real quick before you move on, it just came across that Shane Victorino is headed to the All-Star game. The Phillies just say that, the fans voted him in.
Oh, so he won that vote-off because, yeah, he wasn't
originally.
Yes,
he did.
Name.
He won the vote-off.
That shows you how excited the city of Philadelphia is about baseball because, you know, we're winning – you know, things like that as far as voting the last player into the All-Star game. Everybody's on the computer voting.
Yo, it's crazy.
Is Shane even good anymore?
Listen, though, real quick. I just want to make a point, Dev, to what you said. It's crazy to me. I was telling the guys from the Broad Street line yesterday that I grew up watching, like, Steve Jelks and Shane Rawley. So the fact that, like, baseball is, like, running Philly now. It's kind of crazy. I grew up with some horrible Philly teams.
It's the bandwagon nature, though. You know what I'm saying? Because if you look at it historically, the Phillies are the worst team out of the major four teams in Philadelphia. And, you know, they're the team that everybody loves now. Why? Because they're the team that's winning. So you know how that goes.
Everybody loves a winner, doggy.
Yeah, so that's what happened, everybody, while y'all were on the grind.
All right, it's time to pass the rock, and pass the rock is brought to you by Bay Financial Services. Go to our website and check them out to get your money right. If you're listening for the first time, pass the rock is where the starting five vent on their chosen sports issue or report their favorite headline of the week. So what I'm going to do is inbound the rock to my man Dev. What's poppin'?
All right, I'm going to tell y'all why I'm mad this week. I'm mad because I don't have a subject to talk about for Pastor Rock. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring ball up, set up my squad, and I'm going to hit B. Austin, the hot block commander, waiting on the wing to do something with the basketball. Holla at him.
Yo, you just did what a good point guard is supposed to do early on in the game. Yo, just give it up. I got you. I'm not really mad. I just want to help people think and look at things from a new and enlightened perspective. And so we're going to talk about the lockout. But we're going to talk about how the lockout helps veteran players, hinders rookies and young players, and ultimately leads to bad product. First, you may ask, well, how is a lockout going to help anybody? I'm glad you asked. Whether it's football or it's basketball or any sport for that matter, when you have a veteran player And we're not talking about your starters. We're talking about your bencher guys, your Anthony Carters, your Ira Nobles, your Jared Jeffries, you get the picture. These guys have the benefit of understanding the system they play in, understanding the pace of the game, understanding the condition that they need to have their bodies in, understanding that, you know, just what it is to be a professional athlete at that level, even though they're bums. So what ends up happening in those cases is you have a talented player who may be in his rookie season or second year or third year who hasn't quite gotten all of it together. The talent is obviously there. The athleticism is on point, but he may not know the system, or he may not have acclimated his body to playing a full 16-game season in the case of football or 82-game season in the case of basketball. And so what happens is when the lockout finally ends, who's in a better position to get those minutes that rookie or that young player should have? That bum-ass Damon Jones type of player. Why? Because he is a professional and he's ready to go. And so what ends up happening? You end up fielding what is just above a scab player in place of the talent that should be on the court or on the field. This also rings true for rookie undrafted free agents. They don't have the opportunity to showcase their talent in OTAs. They don't have the time to showcase their talent in preseason. And it makes room for another veteran bum to make a squad and give us inferior product that we don't really want to see. And so this is why the lockout works in the favor of veteran bums, works to a disadvantage to rookies, be them drafted. You know, it could be a first rounder such as Kyrie Irving. It doesn't matter. He's still a rookie to the professional environment. So not having the opportunity to work with his teammates, get the work that he needs with his coaches, we're going to end up with bad product. So I would pretty much scratch this season for both sports. Unless football gets things worked out, we may see a full, you know, preseason or whatever. But basketball, yo, we're going to see horrible basketball. The Miami Heat are still going to be running no plays and no sets if this lockout lasts. And so that's it. I'm going to pass the rock. Who open? I'm looking for yo. If y'all want me to shoot, I'll shoot.
I got it.
I will shoot it, brother.
I got it. Stop gunning. Yo, what's up with the veteran bums? That's your new word, veteran bums.
Veteran bums.
At any rate, what's up, War Room World? This is Jimmy, aka the Blueprint, aka Spike Tarantino. And this week, I want to say a few words about Dallas Cowboys wide receiver, one Roy Eugene Williams Jr. Now, for those who have not heard the story, Roy is going to court to get back an engagement ring he gave to his former girlfriend, Brooke Daniels. I'm not going to comment on the fact that the ring cost $76,000 or the fact that despite the ring costing $76,000, she said no. What I want to talk about is Roy's choice of proposal. In an affidavit signed by Roy himself, he says that he sent $5,000 for school and dental bills, a baseball for her brother, and he wanted to surprise her by including a recorded marriage proposal with the $76,000 ring through the mail just before Valentine's Day. Yes, you heard me right. He sent the ring and the proposal through the mail. She declined the proposal and did not return the ring, and claimed to have lost the ring until an insurance investigation revealed her father had the ring. Forget the story of her trying to bro to you. Let's talk about how you thought it would be cool to propose through the mail. I don't know how bright you are, Roy, but you don't have to be a 14-karat gold slum computer wizard to realize that your proposal was deplorable. I wonder if there's a woman who dreams of being proposed to in the mail. When little girls are growing up, they say, wow, I want someone to propose to me through the mail. Probably not. You should be embarrassed, homie. You must look like a sissy soft sucker because last year, Dez Bryant refused to participate in your rookie hate because he knew you were a nut. Now, Brooke tried to keep your 76K ring because she also thought you were a nut, and now the world knows you are a nut because you proposed to your woman via snail mail. I wonder if you got insurance when you sent the ring. Also, did you send it certified or with delivery confirmation? Was it priority or express mail? By the way, where did you get this idea, Roy? This sounds like something Larry David would do on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Idiot. But yo, I guess it's a good thing her father says he'll give the ring back to avoid a lawsuit. So at least your nut-ass got your ring back. There's a lockout going on, so you may need that, though. If the lockout lasts longer, you will have more assets, and you should be pretty, pretty good. I'm not. And with that, I'll pass the rock to the homie PJ.
Yo, Roy Williams don't deserve that ring back. He sent her a nice roll home, a nice Philadelphia roll home through the mail with a weak recorded message. Man, let that joker be burnt for that ring. But the double team coming, and oh, here come a little short dude, so actually it's a triple team. I'm going to pass out of it, throw a bounce pass to the good Doc Bay on the wing.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Yo, with that Roy Williams thing, I wonder if Dez Bryant was like, yo, give me that ring so I could pay off my bill, that $55,000 bill. But appreciate it, PJ. Now, good evening, War Room family. I just wanted to take some time to talk about the lockouts that are happening in the NFL and NBA. Now, overall, in the NFL lockout, I put more blame on the owners for being a bit too greedy. With the NBA lockout, I don't know what to believe. I hear reports that only 8 teams made a profit last year, and then I hear that teams are cooking their publicly viewed books to make it look like they are losing money when they are not. I think the people who need to be held partially accountable for this financial mess are the player agents. Now, at one point in time, when I finished playing college basketball, I had thoughts of becoming a sports agent, but then I decided to head in a different direction. Now, after I share these examples with you, you understand why I think the agents deserve some culpability. Example number one, why are top NFL draft picks guaranteed $10, $20, $30, $40, and $50 million before touching the field and proving that they are worth that much money? Now, the agents who represent these players negotiate with these teams, and they look at what the guy picked at the same spot last year signed for, and they ask for a little bit more. Then, if a player feels as though he was better than a guy picked ahead of him, like Michael Crabtree, he will tell his agent to ask for the same money and hold out until the team meets the player demands. Example number two, NBA owners are saying they are not making any money, but then the owners continually overpay players in the NBA. I'll give you an example. If one particular player is averaging 10 points and 10 rebounds on a good team and just signed a contract for $9 million a year, the agent of the guy who averages 9 points and 9 rebounds on a bad team is not as efficient, not as good as a defender, and is more of a team cancer than a leader, his agent will ask for the same money, saying the stats don't lie. Example number three, the agent for a player who averages 6 points per game, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists per game in 18 minutes a game will go to a team and have a per 40-minute averages printed out to show that his client would be averaging 15 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists per game if he played 40 minutes a game. The agent then will ask the NBA team to pay his client a little less than what a guy averaging 14 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists makes, and the team agrees to pay it. Example number four, real NBA contracts that were given out. All of these contracts were signed over a 5 to 7 year period in length. I will just mention the yearly amount. Rashard Lewis, $20 million per year. Samuel Dalembert, $10 million. Larry Hughes, $15 million. Jerome James, $6 million. Designer Jock, $5 million. Ben Gordon, $11 million. Austin Crozier, $7 million. Brian Cardinal, $7 million. Eric Dampier, $11 million. Donald Foyle, $7 million. Darius Miles, $8 million. Bobby Simmons, $11 million. Elton Brand, after the Achilles injury, $16 million. Eddie Curry, $10 million. Ben Wallace, $15 million. Kenyon Martin, $18 million. Allen Houston, $17 million. Rafe LaFrench, $10 million. And last but not least, Joe Johnson at $20 million per year. It seems like many owners throw out the business acumen they use to build up the fortune to buy those teams. And with that, I was shot fake and jab right while on the right wing, causing the defender to shift his body weight and balance to my right, just enough for me to dribble left towards the lane. I see the help defender stepping up
to help, so I cross over left to right, and the help defender reaches for the rock in my right hand, so I wrap it around my back to the left, and the defenders run into the first defender who was guarding me on the wing. I then take off on my right foot with the rock still in my left hand extended, watching the center jumping over to block it. I bring the rock down to my hip, MJ87 dunk contest style, get bumped by the center, and then continue to the rock up off the glass on the left side of the rim.
And the crowd goes wow.
That was vicious, man. That was vicious, Kill. Straight up, I'm still visualizing. But anyway, I'm going to let everybody know how they can get in touch with us. Y'all can start off by going to our website, www.warroomsports.com. Sign up for the War Report, our weekly newsletter, right from our homepage. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. You can't beat these deals. If you'd like to send an email to one of the hosts personally, all of our individual email addresses are also on that page. And while you're on the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy cool War Room Sports merchandise. We got everything from hats to T-shirts to hoodies to onesies to kicks. I mean, everything brandishing that fly War Room logo. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/War Room Sports. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/War Room Sports. Subscribe to and friend our YouTube channel at warroomsportstv.com. For access to all of our media content in one place, anywhere, anytime, download the War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple device. And for general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/The War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or your Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, follow us, friend us, and favorite us to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. Speaking of blogs, check out ours, All's Fair in Sports and War, on the blog tab of our website. Please subscribe to our iTunes podcast so that you can listen to the show at any time on your own device. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak with the hosts, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you already listened from the phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand, and who knows? The War Room professors just might call on you.
Yes, sir. I'm gonna
pass it back over to you, Dev.
All right, yeah. So real quick, we're going to get into some of these hot topics because we all know, you know, tonight's main topic is overseas ballers. So before we get some of them ballers on the line, we're going to talk about some other stuff going on in sports this week. Wimbledon just wrapped up earlier in the week, and we just want to give a shout out to the winners on the female side of things. Petra Kvitova beat Maria Sharapova to win Wimbledon for the ladies, and Novak Djokovic beats Rafael Nadal to win Wimbledon. Not only did he win, but he took over the world's number one ranking. So congratulations to those people for doing what they do on the stage where they do it. Did any of you guys see on Saturday night the boxing match, the heavyweight, the anticipated heavyweight match between Vladimir Klitschko and David Haye? Anybody watch that?
Could be
disgrace. Yeah, I watched it.
It was a disgrace.
Yeah. That's what
the heavyweight division.
I didn't actually catch this one, and I actually was going to watch it the next day, but after hearing about how much of a disgrace it was, I didn't even want to watch it, even though I knew I had to get the knowledge for the show.
Yeah.
But I hear, you know, after all the smack that David Haye talked, that he didn't even fight back.
Yo,
what happened?
He did.
Brother Dev, Vladimir would have won if he didn't even have no arms.
one of the biggest problems was is that Haye, and you're right, Dev, he talked all that trash, and he was never willing to actually commit and mix it up with him. One of the problems is that he was significantly shorter than Klitschko, so a lot of the times when he was throwing punches or when he was trying to throw his punches with mean intentions, he had to, like, leave his feet to throw them. So he was off balance the whole fight. He was all over the place. I mean, he probably fell from tripping and, like, just being off balance at least, like, 8 times. And one time, I forgot what round it was, but the ref actually gave him a standing 8 count because he kept telling him to stop just falling and stumbling and acting like a fool. So, I mean, it was an awful fight. I mean, Klitschko really, I mean, he was landing the more effective punches. He didn't really ever turn it up and, like, go in on him or anything like that. But, I mean, he was just landing more effective, clean punches. It was a very boring fight, though, I'll tell you that much.
So, basically, with him, you know, doing the jump punches, he was basically getting his little Mac on from Mike Tyson's punch-out. But,
no,
exactly.
Hey, PJ, let me ask you a question, PJ.
Okay.
Since you're the boxing expert. David Haye claimed that he had broke his foot, so he couldn't get any leverage in terms of throwing his punches.
He broke his pride.
Dude was sending out twit pics of his foot. I'm like, cuz, what's wrong with this boy? But he was saying that he had broke his foot.
Mike, were you really sick this week? What was the problem?
I broke my back.
That's what that reminded. Yo, he took his boxing shoe off in the ring to show him. And I think it was Larry Merchant that was interviewing him and was like, yeah, we don't really need to see all that. Like, he was just trying to explain and build up his excuse. Because, you know, Larry Merchant is ignorant and straight to the point. He was like, yeah, we don't need to see that. Like, you know, bring the camera back up to me. But, yeah, I don't know. I didn't see him, like, noticeably limping or even favoring his foot throughout the fight. He was just flopping around and jumping around, throwing dumb punches, never got in the rhythm. So I think that might be a little bit of an excuse. I'm not going to say it wasn't painful, but I didn't see a noticeable, like, limp.
Do you guys think that it had anything to do with, like, an intimidation factor that he wasn't expecting? Because you think about it. Vladimir Klitschko, you know, for all his, you know, his notoriety for running out of gas and stuff like that during fights, as far as his size, dude is on some Ivan Drago type stuff. So it might be a thing where you watch him fight and, you know, you train for him, and then you really don't know, you know, how big the dude is until you stand in face-to-face with him in the ring. So you think it might have had something to do with that since he, you know, since y'all said he really didn't want to fight back?
That's a good point, because usually when you spar, when you're going into a camp and you're sparring for the fight that you're about to fight, you try to find sparring partners that are very similar to the person that you're about to fight in stature and speed and style. It's hard to find a big Ivan Drago-looking dude to fight against that can box. Like, you might just get a big stiff in there that you punch in that don't move because you had to find a dude that was, like, 6'6", like, 290. So I think that may have had – because it's like when you get in there, you don't really – I mean, you know, but you don't really know until you get in there. You actually have to throw your punches up the entire fight instead of throwing your punches at eye level. So I think that probably played a part in it because he just looked very discombobulated throughout the whole fight.
Yeah, David Haye on coke.
No.
All right, so let's move on off that since it was corny. the MLE. I want to know if the MLE is a sport. For those out there who don't know what the MLE is, it's Major League Eating. Joey Chestnut won a competition on the 4th of July because he ate 62 Nathan's hot dogs. Is this a sport, and is Joey Chestnut an athlete? Anybody?
I can't go with the athlete, dog. Hey, yo, they did on the Four Letters did a sports science episode on him and what his body is doing during that time in terms of when he eats, like, 30 hot dogs in 5 minutes or whatever he does, and how, like, I don't want to get into, like, the medical, like, doctor side of the stuff, but, like, what his esophagus is doing, how he jumps up to actually get the food to, like, slide down his esophagus, and I still can't see that as being an athlete. I think that's some kind of skill. He has a dangerous skill, and I just want to know what type of antacid and digestive enzymes that he chases those hot dogs with when he finishes eating.
Hey, the fact that you said that, did you peep that after he won, he did his post-game press conference with a bottle of Pepto-Bismol in his hand? And I think they're all.
Oh, I didn't see that.
he got a nice cheek for that.
Yeah, Major League trifling. Man.
Major League.
If this is declared a sport, you're gonna see Karen Steffens come out and demand that what she does be
Major League Chewer. She's gonna be the Major League Chew like the gum.
Major league Bacchus.
I guess they counted that sport because they show it on the da-na-da.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, they try to make this a sport. I look at that more as a skill or some kind of creative way to destroy your digestive tract.
Here's in terms of it being a sport, FOH, like I told you about golf, if you can get up and not have to change your clothes and shower after you finish, you don't play a sport.
Well, you got to take a dump.
You got to take a dump
when you finish.
Jimmy, unless they're wearing bibs like babies, they probably do got to change their clothes and shower. I think it's nasty. I don't think, like, that kind of stuff, competitive eating, should be on TV. Because it's nasty, man. Like, you don't want your kid to flip channels and run into that. That's nasty, man.
Yo, I actually dry heave sometimes when I watch them dudes. Because they throw up so much, like the wing bowl and all that. Yo, I actually start, like, dry heaving. I got to turn away. I can't eat and watch that.
They sit there and do that little fast. They just stuffing food in
their mouth. They could turn the channel and get a Raiders game. That's worse than it.
Yeah, or they could turn the channel and they could show Al Davis sitting in the box. That's worse than it.
Exactly.
Yes, Raiders.
Check it out, though. Shout out to Al. He turned 82 earlier in the week. Go ahead, Kill.
Ew. Shout out to him. Kobayashi, the cat who's like won more championships, he had a contract dispute with Nathan's, which is why he was banned from the event. So he, via satellite, on a rooftop of a hotel, he actually ate more hot dogs than the other guy and unofficially won with 69, but he doesn't get any cake for it. So.
See, this is another thing. Why would you do that? Why would you do that and you're not even in the competition? You just wanted to
Why would you do it for free?
I'm going to eat.
Homie was just hungry. He had
Yo, why would you eat sausage for free? Unless you married to some cameraman.
Real quick though.
He word on the street, Kill, is he's ducking Joey Chestnut. That he really didn't have no contract dispute.
They think Joey Chestnut on the juice. But
Joey Chestnut actually does work out though. He said he does work out because he tries to keep his body weight down just so he can keep the area where his stomach. I guess the area where your stomach sits, the less body fat that you have in that area allows your stomach to expand more when you do eat. So he tries to maintain a workout regimen.
Was he in Wing Bowl?
Yeah, he was in Wing Bowl before. I think he won it before, but I think this might have been a couple years ago. It might have been recently. I don't know, but I know I remember hearing about him years ago.
Is Wing Bowl boneless wings? Because how they?
I don't know. No, I think they're bone.
Do they gotta go to everybody's plate? I'm not even gonna call it a plate. Do they gotta go to everybody's trough afterwards and check how much
and check and make sure they got the meat off?
They have rest for that. I'm about to start a protest, man. I'm gonna go to Congress. We gotta ban competitive eating. MLE is corny. All right, look, let's go to some baseball. I guess this is why they call dude the machine, because Pujols, who had the broken bone in his wrist, who was supposed to be out 4 to 6 weeks, he's already back, and it's only been 2 weeks. So, y'all got any thoughts on this? Like, how do you know? He was in his hyperbaric chamber, I guess.
They said he's a notoriously quick healer, too.
Yeah, no story.
Yo, maybe he popped some HGH. Maybe he took some HGH or something.
Yeah,
he's probably dealing with that Canadian doctor that's unlicensed, that's being connected with Tiger and some of those other athletes. He probably saw him before dude went into the. It's like, no, I don't know. I think he might have just been a quick healer, really determined to get back, you know, just being a contact.
First, I was thinking, like, the Cardinals, you know, they need to take their time, maybe not let him back right away, but. I mean, I guess it's his contract year, so it was up to him to show and prove. So I guess he doesn't want to miss unnecessary time if he think he can help the team. So good luck to the machine, boy. And speaking of HGH and whatever else we just said, the Roger Clemens trial is underway. They're basically in the jury selection mode right now. But interesting thing came out yesterday. The judge in the trial said that they may allow testimonies from other players. Now, do y'all think that's a good thing for Roger's case or a bad thing for Roger's case?
Bad.
Why do you think it's bad?
It's good. It's a good question because I don't know. Like, when they made the list of players, they were talking about people from Bonds to Sosa to McGuire to all the people that were, like, connected with steroids in the past. You know what I'm saying? Like in that, in the steroid era. So I'm like, I'm wondering what would they do? Like when they get on the stand, like are they gonna like? Maybe they took an oath. Like, look, we all got to go to trial. We all gonna lie for each other, and you know, everybody look out for the other one. Or they
but
might get
I'm
out there and start
thinking. The line of questioning for these guys won't really revolve around whether or not they know if Clemens actually did steroids. But I think it has something to do with, like, the distribution channel and who was getting the steroids to these guys and, you know, stuff like that. So they're probably just going to use the line of questioning, you know, how lawyers do to tie up loopholes and try to link this with something else. I can't see them just asking those dudes, do you know? I mean, except for Andy Pettit.
Except Andy Pettit, yeah. How about the Andy Pettit? They're going
to ask. Yeah, they're actually already linked to doing the stuff together. So, I don't know. I don't really know if it's a good or bad thing. But, yeah. Roger, you know, it's going to be a tough trial for him. So,
And he elected to have this. He elected for this trial, essentially.
He
chose to go this route, you know. So.
Exactly. And the thing is, I mean, he was basically, all of this started because his name came up in the Mitchell report, and he was just trying to clear his name. He wasn't obligated to go to Congress and lie to them. Now you're on trial because they think you lied to Congress. So it's like if you would have just, you know, instead of trying to be the tough guy and clearing your name, you know, you could have stayed home, shut up, and you wouldn't be on trial right now. I mean, because either way, whether he didn't step to Congress or whether he did and all of this came down, I think his Hall of Fame nod is pretty much out of the window either way. So even if that's going to be gone, I don't want to be on trial and have to, you know, possibly.
He could probably go to jail. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, needed to just shut up. Yeah, so good luck to Roger the Dodger. All right, let's get into some NBA stuff real quick before we start to get our international ballers on the line. Rudy Fernandez actually declined, you know, because he just got with the Mavericks in a trade. So he's probably like, you know, I'm with the champs now. So he declined an offer from Real Madrid in Spain. But on the flip side of that, Deron Williams is reportedly has a deal to play in Turkey if the lockout extends into the NBA season. Now, they said that a lot of players might end up following suit. So, Kill, what do you think? If this turns into a trend, if it's even possible for it to become a trend, who do you think that puts more of the – do you think that puts pressure on the owners?
I think so, because a lot of times, you know, once they start signing these contracts, a lot of times the buyout clauses are paid by the team. So the owners, if they want their players back, they're going to have to pay money to get their players back and whatever their players were under contract for. So I think it's something the owners – have to watch out for. Now, if a couple guys do it, you know, whatever, but if like 20, 30 guys, 40 guys start doing that, then, you know, it's going to be crazy. Remember they were talking about that about 3 years ago, about going overseas and making like $50 million a year, LeBron and Kobe and all those guys?
That's what I heard, like, because I've done some research on that very thing that you just said, especially since we had this particular show coming up with Overseas Ballers. From my research, I found out that it's kind of a misconception that these teams overseas have all this money in the first place. So I can't really see an influx of superstar players, you know, maybe mid-tier players to bums, but I can't really see an influx of superstar players just everybody just go their separate way during the lockout and everybody can get a job. Like, where's all this money going to come from?
I did hear a rumor, though. What I heard was that Kobe and his agent, I think his name is Dave Plank or something like that, they were in negotiations to set up this thing in China where it's like a tour where they bring in certain superstars, and most of them be made up of Plank's clients who include like Kobe, Fisher, Derek Williams, a lot of different people to go around and play like sort of like pickup games with some of the professional teams over there, but they would get paid, which would help them during this lockout.
And it's kind of risky, though. It's risky for the players and the owners. On the player side, you're under contract over here with your American team. While there's a lockout, it's fine and good. You have every right to go somewhere else and play ball. But if you get, like, a serious injury, that could be cause for your contract to to be voided over here. So they are taking
Jason Williams type stuff.
And unless they're making that stuff like you guys mentioned a minute ago, unless they're going over there to make $50 million, it might not be worth it. Like, Darren Williams is scheduled to make like $200,000 a month, which is no pennies, but over here he's making like $2 million a month. So if he goes
over
there.
One of his clients is the number two pick in the draft, Derek Williams. That's one of Plinka's clients. And they were saying that, you know, he doesn't have any money at all anyway. And like the other guy, Klay Thompson, who was drafted in the first round, he was on TV talking about, I'm still living in a home with my parents getting allowance, because basically these rookies are just like, you know, SOL at this point.
I think that it's not, I don't think
it'll become a trend, but I know that there are certain owners over there that have the bread, and with no salary cap, It's a possibility. I don't know that it's a probability, but like a team like Olympiacos, they're owned by a billionaire, so he'll reach into his own pockets to make those deals.
But listen, that's taking a big risk for those guys, because okay, all of these players are gonna want an out in their contract. Like, okay, when this lockout is over, I'm gonna want to, you know, be able to get out of this contract and go back home. So that's a lot of wasted money for these teams over there. So it's just another example of America just thinking everything is sweet. Like, we can just do what we want, and then when it's over, we can come back, because those dudes are that desperate that they'll pay all of this money. But, hey, it might happen. It might happen. Hey, Jimmy, take that next topic real quick.
The last hot topic we want to get into real quick before we get into our main segment is y'all man Michael Jeffrey Jordan and his love letter. Yo, have any of y'all seen these love letters?
I heard that his grammar was like alfalfa.
Hey, Jim, I got the transcript real quick. I can try to speed read it. It's going to be hard to speed read, though, because the grammar and the spelling is atrocious. So, real quick, this happened back in Laney High School. He was writing a letter to one of his chicks back then. Letter says, "My dearest Laquette, how are you and your family doing? Fine, I hope. I'm in advanced chemistry class, yeah, right, writing you a letter. so that tell you how much I care for you. I decide to write you because I felt that I made you look pretty rotten after the last night." And, y'all, I can read. The reason I sound like this is because he can't write. "I want to tell you that I am sorry and hope that you accept my apology, spelled APOLOGIE. I know that you feelings were hurt whenever I lost my necklace or had it stolen. I was really happy when you gave me my honest earned money that I won off the bet. Giz that. I want to thank you for letting me hold your annual." Giz an annual.
Whoa, hold your annual.
I show it to everyone at school. Everyone think you are a very pretty young lady, and I had to agree because it is very true. Please don't let this go to your head. Smile. I sorry to say that I can't go to the game on my birthday because my father is taking the whole basketball team out to eat on my birthday. Please don't be mad because I'm trying to get down there a week from Feb 14th. If I do get the chance to come, please have some activity for us to do together. That's Mike asking for some booty. I want you to know that my feeling for you has not changed yet. Not changed. I am finally getting used to going with a girl much smaller than I. I hope you my hint. Well, I have spent my time very wisely by write to you. I hope you write back soon. Well, I must go. See you next time around, which I hope comes soon, with my best love, Michael J. Jordan."
Who's that?
Mike sound like a free slave, man.
Mike sound like alfalfa. Mike is alfalfa.
He smell like buckwheat snorted. So
let me hold you, booty.
I write you. Thank you for letting me hold your annual. That must be
a hold up. Kill, we got our first guest on the line, right?
Hold your annual.
Kill. You there, Kill?
All right.
Biz A.
Doc Bay, where you? Oh, I see what the problem is.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you were still muted. We got our first guest on the line, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, so look, we'll get back into the mic stuff in between our guests if we have time, because we got a couple other stories that we want to talk about. But B. Austin, you want to bring our guests onto the line? Well, I bring them on. You can.
Yes, sir. It was with great pleasure that we welcome into the war room my man, 50 Grand, legendary DC baller Lou White. Lou, what up?
Lou, you there?
Lou, you with
here?
Us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey,
what's up, homie?
How's everything?
We're good,
man. Fabulous, man. We got the War Room Generals in here. We happy to have you. We're going to kick this thing right off. Lou, you played everywhere. Share with us some of the places you've played, man.
I've played in every league in the United States there is to play. I've been in the Dominican Republic. I've been in South America. I've been in Europe. The only place I haven't played, basically, is in the Asian market, but I've been everywhere.
Man, that's what's up. Hey, Lou, what's up? This is Dev, man. We spoke yesterday. I'm good.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm good, brother. What I wanted to ask you is, since you have played in a lot of leagues around the globe, can you think back to, like, which one of these leagues you were in when you enjoyed your most success? Like where were you when you were just absolutely balling out of control?
Actually, balling out of control was in the ABA, back when the ABA was 7 teams and when there was over 35 pros in the league. It's actually when Dennis Rodman was playing, Demar Johnson, Matt Barnes, Gennaro Pargo, Derek Dial, Gino Carlisle. These guys were all on the same team. You know, those are rack of pros right there. Joe Crispin, DeJuan Wheat, and a lot of guys in there. It was only 7 teams, but it was so competitive. And, you know, that was when really balling out of control, because the team that I was on, you know, really didn't have any players. So when I got there, they just turned me loose. And, you know, I just had some grade-A footage, grade-A film, played the entire game. And, you know, that spawned me on to some different contracts. But that was probably the most fun that I actually had.
Yeah, that's cool. I can see how, you know, those teams could be stacked like that with all the players you name, because if it's 7 teams, you don't have that many places where you could spread around that talent. So it sounds like they had
right.
a lot.
Right. That actually was a real fun league, really fun league.
Yes.
So Lou, when you played in these other countries, was it difficult to deal with, like, the language barriers and the cultural differences? Like, how did you handle that?
Well, you actually just had to pay attention to a lot of detail. When you don't speak the language, you have to really pick up on people's body language. You really had to pick up on the tone of their voice. And, you know, it's your senses that kick in that make you aware when you don't speak the language. That's basically when you don't have, you know, hands-on one of the managers around or a translator for you, then, you know, that's what you have to do. But your senses kick in and let you know when something's not right, you know. And, you know, as far as the money, everything is universal. Money's universal. We, you know, we all can count. So you can go straight to the grocery store, pick up this, and this. And, you know, when you get to the register, you know, she may be asking you pay paper on plastic. You know, you just point out one, and the money's universal, and, you know, it's easy to survive that way.
Yeah. I'm sure when you showed them that you had money to pay for the things that you were looking for, they accepted the fact that you couldn't speak that language.
That's a universal language. That works
That's
everywhere.
Right. No doubt.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Lou, this is Akil. Nice to meet you, brother.
All right.
Now, it seems like basketball has taken you all over the globe. In any mm-hmm. leagues, who are some of the more notable players you've played with and against?
You talking about currently in the league, or do you mean retired or greats?
All of them.
Just tell us the story, brother. Just in general, I mean, like the pickup games with, you know, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, those are probably the most memorable. out of everything, just realizing that Michael Jordan just doesn't shut up. I mean, he talks the entire game. He talks the entire game. I mean, one day I went to the gym and we played 6-7 games, and I just looked over at Rip Hamilton like, man, does he shut up? And they're like, no. And, you know, and it just continued from there. He talked all the way in the ice room to where we were icing and electric stem, getting treatment, to when we went to the pool. We went to the pool room and was playing pool, and he talked to death in there. And it was like, man. And then when he got outside around the public, he pressed the mute button. And I'm like, wait a minute. We just need to play in public. We just need to play in public because then he'll be quiet. You know, so... You know, that was probably the most memorable, going having that time to play with Michael Jordan for about 3 months, you know, Monday through Friday, you know, for a summer was probably about the best. I played with Magic Johnson in at UCLA when they were opening the gym up, and, you know, you can't touch him. You can't put a hand on his waist or it's a foul. You know, don't get your hands off me, young fella. That's a foul. You can't put your hands on. You know, he did.
That's a good impression, right there.
Hey, does Magic still run point? Does Magic still run point out there?
Yes, he has to dictate the game. He definitely has to dictate the game because he trusts that he will make the right pass regardless. You know, he doesn't really trust a lot of guys. Like if he gets a rebound, he'll give it to one of the faster guards and outlet, and he'll direct traffic. No, get to the middle. No, look to the wing. He'll direct traffic from the backcourt if he's not going to run. You know, so it's, you know, the experience of all of this and just taking it all in, because these are guys that we grew up watching. So it's like, yeah. Man, I wouldn't trade any of this, you know, just to be around any of these guys, you know. So.
Yeah. Hey, Lou, this is Jimmy. I have a question. Nice to meet you, by the way, good brother.
Hey, Jimmy.
We hear you're going to play in Mexico soon. How'd this deal come about?
I'm one of my teammates that I actually played with in Fresno, in the ABA. He was like, man, I haven't played with a point guard, a hard-nosed point guard that plays both ends and is very unselfish. And he was like, I know exactly what we need to win in this team. And then he called me and asked me if I've been playing. So, you know, I gave him the information of my stats in the current leagues and things that I've been playing in, and he actually looked them up and was like, so you're in shape? And I was like, I am. And he was like, man, I got a job for you. Do you want to come? So, you know, it just happened, you know, things just happened to work out that way. You know, just, you know, happy to be blessed. That's how things happen, so.
That's what's up. That's what's up.
All right, this is Dev again. So, you know, before we get you out of here, we definitely got to let you promote anything you want to promote. We hear that you know, working with some kids, et cetera. So is there anything you want to promote to the audience? Because we got a big following in the D.C. area, so, you know.
Well, you know, as far as promoting and actually what I'm doing is, you know, I get with a lot of kids, and I mentor, tutor, and sports training. You know, I've been there. I know what it's like to be that child and look up to someone who's actually played and actually made money playing. So, you know, having someone give back, you know, with your ears open, you know, that means a lot to the kids, and that's the type of the role model that I try to be. So, I have all services available. You can see my information at certifiedmove.com. CERTIFIED.com, certifiedmove.com. So.
So what we'll do is we'll put that on our Facebook page and we'll tweet it out. You know, get people checking out the website and everything.
But, hey, Deb, real quick, Deb, real quick. Somebody just came on our Facebook page and said, "Leave you a message." I don't know if you know this guy or not. His name is Patrick. He said to tell Lou that the 49ers are garbage. So I don't know whether that's your team and somebody's messing with you.
Oh gosh. Yeah, that's been my team for years. I always thank you, Patrick Waring. Thank you for putting my team on display.
You're acquainted with Pat.
Yeah, I am. You know, he heckles me on a regular basis, letting me know that my team is in the toilet. He does it every week for the last 8 years. So it's been 8 years running, and he is consistent, and that's what I like about him. He lets me know my team is bad on a consistent basis. You're the best for that. Yes, he's the best for that. But I am the last of the 261 49er fans that we have on this earth. So.
All right, thanks.
All right, well, Luke, thanks for joining us, man. We're going to have you on again probably when we have a longer amount of time to talk to you. But it was great to have you on. And
man, it's great to be on, man. All
right, man. Good luck to you in Mexico also.
All right, you fellas, take care.
Yeah. All right,
thanks a lot, Luke.
Fight, thanks, Lou. Lou White.
That's what's up.
Yo, that's crazy.
Yeah, this team is garbage. So, we're going to so back to the little Michael Jordan thing real quick. What, y'all got any thoughts on the educational system at Laney?
Well, I thought about one thing when Lou was saying that Mike talked a bunch of trash. I could only imagine now how his trash talk sound and whether anyone actually understands what he's saying.
He probably trash talking Ebonics.
Yo, for me, this is just really confirmation that hero worship is wrong, because all of the things that you perceive your hero to be is so far from what they can be. I mean, yo, Mike wears a weak earring, his gear is trash, and he can't really write or speak English. And this is, you know, the guy that I grew up idolizing and thinking, you know, was, so that's just my two cents. He's still the greatest in the world, way better than anybody else mentioned on the context of basketball. But you can't dress, homie, or speak.
Yeah,
nope.
It's
no
unfortunate,
comment.
Man. It's unfortunate. But let me ask you something. How did that actually surface? Like, where did that come from? What's the history? Like, what's the story behind that letter that it just randomly came out?
Well, what happened was it's one of his ex-girlfriends, and it supposedly it got leaked somehow. And she's suing, I guess, whoever leaked the letter, because she's actually trying to protect him. She didn't want it to get out. She wasn't trying to get any attention from him. She just, like, held on to it. You know what I mean? My thing is, like, yo, when God blesses you with that much basketball talent, he has to, like, take something away. Like, yo, keep things equal, man. Because my man is the worst human being.
What grade? What grade was he in? Talking like Sasquatch Alfalfa.
I hope he was like, I'm hoping it was like ninth, but it almost sounds a little bit more mature than ninth grade, because he's like, I'm gonna come see you, and I'm thinking if you're like 14, 15, it's very rare that you're traveling out of town to go see a chick. I mean, you may, but you know, I don't know. So,
I mean,
he might have been like junior or senior.
The funny thing is, he started the letter off with "my dearest."
My dearest. Yeah. Now, what do you think the ethnicity of the girl, the recipient girl, was? Since he said "my dearest."
Well, here's the thing. I mean, considering he said "my dearest LaQuette," you know what I mean?
Oh,
like, he said LaQuette.
Okay, LaQuette. All right,
yeah.
I answered my own.
Yeah, that was before he was qualified to do an Ahmad Rashad.
Yo, right.
Okay, hey, real quick, fellas, real quick, enough about Mike's gear and his letter. But War Room right now, we'll like to introduce David Knowles, overseas player, also played his ball at Pitzer College in California, and hails from Plano, Texas. How you doing, David?
I'm good. What's going on, Akil?
I'm good.
Hey,
right.
How you doing, man? Welcome to the war room.
What's up, Dave? How are you?
I'm good. Who is this?
This is B. Austin.
Okay, what's going on, B. Austin?
Man, I'm happy to have you in the war room, brother.
Thank you.
All right, Dave. Now, before you're going to hear from all of us, but first question I'll start off with, just let everybody know where you played.
Okay. So I played my high school ball at a small private high school in Dallas, Texas, called Green Hill School. I went from there to I did a prep year at a school called the Hill School in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, and then went from there.
Shout out to Pottstown.
Yeah, shout out to Pottstown, yeah. And then went from there to a Division III school in California called Pitzer College, which is a member of a five-school consortium of schools called the Claremont Colleges. Played well enough there 4 years, and ended up going to Germany, where I played, and I started out in the second division Pro B. Actually ended up getting hurt right before Christmas break and moved to another team called NBC2, in the first league in La Liga, and finished up there, helped them. They've saved the league there. But while there, ended up getting a business idea on the business side of the game that I've been pursuing since. So that's kind of my story.
Cool. So, Dave, this is PJ. Thanks for coming on again, man.
What's going on, PJ?
Not much. What would you say are some of the notable differences between the style of play between the U.S. and, like, say, overseas?
Okay. What I would say is that I think that it kind of differs, based on what league you play in. I feel like, college ball is more organized and the coach has, significant impact on the game, whereas overseas it is a professional level of basketball, so it's pretty wide open. You're a professional, almost like a
right.
Like I saw it as like a paid, prize fighter, And so mm-hmm. based on what league you're in, how many other Americans you have on your team, based on your coach, your role, your team, the playing style is going to differ. I don't know Mike Jordan. I know I played in Germany. He was there while I was there. Was kind of a name while I was there. So, I could say his role on his team in the first division was going to be different than my role in the second division, where the second division I'm going to be called on to, to score more points and to kind of be more for the team, whereas in the first division, I don't know his team. I don't remember what team he was on, but his role, he might not necessarily be relied on to score so many points, but he's still that dude, So,
Right.
Based on what level, based on your coach, your role and the style of play is going to vary. But for the most part, as a pro, you bring whatever you do well to the table. And the better you fulfill your role, the more you'll probably get paid and the longer you'll be around.
Yeah, David, that's pretty consistent with a lot of my my acquaintances that have played overseas. They'll tell me, in high school or on the playground or even in their collegiate careers, they may have been known to do one thing, but when they get overseas, they're getting paid to do something else. It's like, yo, we don't need you to put up 30 a game, but we do need you to get 10 assists and 4 steals. So it's
right.
Definitely about a definitive role. My question was it difficult, to transition in adapting to the language barriers, the culture differences, and then, of course, us being fellas, what was the difference between the female fans when you were in college here and the female fans in Germany? So those are two questions.
So I'll say this. I think that culturally, a lot of it, again, is going to depend on what country you go to. I feel like Germany was a country where there's still it's a real American-friendly country and that there's still 40,000 American troops still there, So they speak a lot of English, especially a lot of the younger Germans. I felt like culturally it wasn't so much of a difference. Now, I know guys that played in like Slovenia and Hungary and the Ukraine, like some of these Eastern European countries that are a little bit culturally not the same, as America. So the language barrier is a little bit bigger. Now, there is still a language barrier, obviously. When they want to start talking business, that's funny how they can switch it up, But when they want to start talking about a player and start critiquing a player, they'll start, there's just some human you can pick up when they want to start, talking serious or whatever.
They start acting like Miss Chi in the Korean grocery store when she's talking to her husband and about you in a different language.
Right. And I had that experience where they were talking about, like, I'm sitting in the back of a van and we're talking and they're sitting there talking and I say, what are they saying? I know they're talking about somebody. And they're like, yeah, they were talking about, how they need to cut the big man that was on our team, the American big man that they had brought over because he wasn't performing. So you could kind of pick up on that, but, just talking crap, just some of the younger players that felt like, again, I played in a league where there was only two Americans. So, again.
That's crazy.
Was that two Americans in the whole team or two Americans in the whole league?
Two Americans on my team per team was all that was in the second division Pro B. That's all you could have. In the regional league, funny enough, you could have three. I think in Pro A, you can have like five or six.
I'm sorry, I need to cut you off, Dave. Can you hear me, Dave?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Yeah, how you doing? This is Jimmy.
What's going on, Jimmy?
I had a question for you. Did you have aspirations to ultimately play in the NBA, or were you content with playing your career overseas?
I think that I'll say this. I think that most players, I think that's the goal eventually. Like when you pick up the ball, that's where everybody wants to be. I think that as time goes on, especially like when you go to a Division III school or when you go play overseas, you start to realize what it takes to get to that goal. And you begin to realize, you get to see, especially now, like there's so many players across the whole world that are willing and wanting to play and that are over a certain athletic threshold and ability. And then you get to see the business side of the game, you know what I mean, and how that affects, and how you were even a part of that, but you didn't realize, you know, as you're going through AAU, as you're going through prep school, whatever, you begin to see, you know, what it really takes.
Got you.
And I wouldn't take anything away from anybody's game, you know, as far as it's made it to the NBA or even in the D League or anything, but it's just, you got guys that get better, you know what I mean, as they get older. I mean, in America, I mean, if you don't make it to the NBA by 22, you know, you're still, you know, people are still, you know, developing physically, mentally, you know, skill-wise. You know, I know a lot of guys, Division I, mid to low Division I guys, Division II guys, even NAIA guys, and some Division III guys that got, you know, that made moves overseas and have had great careers, you know.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point on how it's different over here than as opposed to over there, where, like you said, at 22, if you're not in the league, they're like, well, you know, that's a great point you made.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of is what it is, and I think we have to look at it. Even if you look at the NBA now, I think players have to look at the game more as a business than, you know, the fantasy and the dream that it is to eventually be there, you know?
Yeah, it's like we live in a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately society. You know, they're ready to get rid of you. That's the business side of it, though.
As a player, you all kind of withdraw.
Hey, Dave, this is Devin.
What's going on, Devin?
I just wanted to – but, you know, before we got you out of here, we wanted to let you promote anything that you're doing right now, you know, let our listeners know what's going on with you. I see that you're you said you're a people watcher and you're aspiring to be a tech geek in your spare time. Well, I mean, is there anything you're doing right now as far as basketball is concerned? You working with any kids, any camps, or anything like that?
Definitely. So here in Dallas, I haven't rolled everything out yet, but I am working on some things on the sports marketing and player development side. I do train a few kids right now. If you want, follow me at DKnowles7 on Twitter, and you'll be able to see a lot of what I do there. I actually have a roommate from prep school that played at the Citadel. He's got a website called ProAthlete360.com. You can follow him on Twitter at ProAthlete360, and you can see what he's doing. But I really believe strongly in using the internet and using the modern technology, just like what we're doing here in the war room, to market sports and to give a voice or to give viewership to maybe a less marketed or less covered sports.
All right. Well, I know you speak to Akil every once in a while, so keep in touch with us and do anything. You know, together, with our company and with the stuff that you're doing, we definitely would like to do that. So what we'll do is we'll get that information from you, and we'll put your Twitter address and your partner's Twitter address on our Facebook page, because that's where most of our forums go on, and we'll spread the word for you. You know, whatever you need us to spread, we'll spread that word. But it was great having you on, and we definitely got to do it again. So,
definitely.
Thanks for coming, brother.
Can I say one more thing?
Go ahead.
I'll say this. Girls around the world are all the same.
Overseas, Fox.
All right, Dave. All right, so
all right, Dave.
All right,
Dave.
Thanks,
Dave. Thanks, man.
Yep. Bye bye.
Yeah, this is pretty good. We're getting, you know, a little introspective on how things go overseas. But we, you know, we're gonna move right along because we got our next overseas baller on the line, and Jarrett Stevens. You guys might know him from Penn State University. He played there from '96 to 2000. In his senior year, which was his best year at Penn State, he averaged 18.8 points a game on 56.6% shooting and 10.5 rebounds to go with it. He's been a few places around the globe, but we'll ask him ourselves. So, Jarrett, you are in the war room. How you doing, brother? This is Devin. You there, Jarrett?
I think you got him on mute.
I think I might have muted him by mistake.
Yeah, we got him. He's on now.
Jarrett, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. All right. How you doing, man? Thanks for coming. Thanks for being a part of the show tonight, man. We really appreciate it, especially on short notice.
Oh, that's no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, no doubt, no doubt. So we'll get right into it because, you know, I kind of gave the people a little intro of your years at Penn State. And all five of us here in the show, we're all from Philly. So, you know, even though Penn State is not that close to Philly, it's kind of like a school where a lot of people from Philadelphia attend. So I'm pretty sure you got a lot of fans in Philadelphia. So we'll start you off like we did everybody else, basically. Give a rundown to our fans of what countries you've played in your career.
When I first came out, I went to Italy for a year, and then toward the beginning of the year I got hurt. But then I ended up going back. I was done for that whole season. I ended up going back the next season to play in Italy again. And from Italy, I was in Germany for a year, and I actually played against Mike Jordan while I was in Germany in the first league. And after Germany, I ended up going to Portugal for a couple of years, and then after Portugal, I went to Spain and I played in Spain. I played a brief stint in France, and then I sort of rounded my career down in South America and Uruguay and Chile. So. And a little bit of Mexico, too, so.
Wow, you touched a whole lot of different countries playing ball. Jarrett, this is Paul, man. Thanks for coming on the show again. What would you say in all the countries that you've played in, when you compare those to the United States, what would you say are the main differences between the style of play over in those countries versus here in the United States?
The style of play it really depends on your team and the country that you play in and how your coach likes to play, and yeah, it's a lot of different factors that go into it. But when they talk about it on TV here, as far as the players being more fundamentally sound, It's sort of true. You know, these kids that, you know, they grow up in the same basketball system, you know, for, you know, since they're 10 years old. So they can, it's like, you know, playing for your high school team all the way through your whole career.
Right.
So, you know, you'll grow up with the same players, you'll grow up with the same, you know, coaches, and at the same time, you're right at home. It's not like, you know, an American player, he plays for his high school, then he has to go to a college away from home, then he has to go to a, you know, a professional team. It's a little bit different when, you know, you play in the same area
system
for the whole time, in the same system. But it's I would say that the play is, you know, say like in Germany, it's more physical. It's real physical, a lot of fouling, but it's not like the fouls are going to get called all the time. But you know, in a country like Italy and Spain, those are going to be the sort of upper echelon type teams in Europe, especially if you're playing in you know, A1 Italy or the ACB or even A2 Italy or in the LAB. These countries they're right under the NBA, and it's you know, professional basketball is it's a lot different from college. Just like the dude was saying that was on before me, he was saying that, you know, now it's about money, and this is your livelihood. So, you know, there is no college coach there to push you, you know, in the summertime and things like that. You have to be, you know, accountable for yourself. So you have to get yourself to go work out, you know. You have to, you know, keep your weight down. And so these are different things that, you know, you go through when you get on that professional level.
Okay, Jared, this is Jimmy. I have a question for you. It's along the lines of what you were saying. What is it like moving from place to place, trying to adjust to all the language barriers and cultural differences? Because you played in a lot of different places. Basketball is taking you all across the world. So how is it, you know, adjusting to the language barriers and the culture?
It's tough, especially when it's you know, you go into a new country, you know, every year. Like I've never had the luxury of re-signing in one place. You know, teams have wanted me to re-sign, but you know, there's always been better offers in different places. But you know, it's as far as kids when they grow up and everything, you know, you never think that you'll need, you know, French or Spanish or any of these classes when you grow up. But once you get older, and, you know, I was the same way. And then it ended up helping me once I got over to these countries. But the language, it could be a barrier if you let it. You know, my first year coming out, I was in Italy. And, you know, a lot of my teammates, you know, pretty much, you know, your coach and your teammates, they speak English, but at the same time, they would help me a whole lot. You know, when I was in practice, I would pick up different things, you know, just different little words, you know, day by day. And then, you know, I always give the story of my wife. I tried to, with the calling cards, calling home every day, you know, I would always try to figure out, you know, what they were saying on these, you know, Italian calling cards. And, you know, that's how I learned how, with the numbers, that's how I learned with my numbers and everything. And then, you know, a lot of people, they when you talk, just like we talk, they speak with their hands. And, you know, in Italy, they would help me a lot. You know, if I went to the grocery store and different things like that, they would help me, and they, you know, they would point to that and tell me how to say it, because they, you know, I'm a, you know, big, huge guy. They knew that I wasn't, you know, from there, so they knew I was an American, so they would help me, you know, they would help me with different words, and I just continued, and I started to learn different things. But then once you go on and you start playing in different places, You pick up a little bit of, you know, Spanish here, Italian here, and but then mostly, you know, just, you know, the overseas thing now is everybody has to speak English. You know, that's the international language, and, you know, it's a lot easier probably than it was 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah. All right. Hey, B. Austin, you want to ask him the joint that I was going to ask him?
Okay.
Yo.
All right, well,
wait,
this is Dev again. Jared, we see that you've won championships, MVPs, three-point contests, et cetera. But we want to know, like, where did you experience your highest level of success? Like, what country were you in, and were you satisfied with your overall career? Because you played 10 years, right?
Yeah. Well, I played in the Spanish league, and I felt like that was probably the peak of my career, even though I won a championship in Portugal. But I just feel like when you played in Spain, just the level and the professionalism was just it was just there, you know. And I felt like I was like right on the verge of the NBA. It's the competition was just so tough, and it wasn't like the first, you know, the first seven players. You know, it was like 12 players on a team, and you know, if you weren't playing good in that first half, you know, it was somebody else that was there to replace you that was just as good. So the competition was tough, and this was on a day in day out basis as far as practice, you know, games and everything. So it really depends on the coach too. My coach, he was a little bit crazy, but at the same time, you know, he put the talent on the floor, and so from week to week, you know, he may change it up. You know, you may start this week, you may start the next week, but you know, it really didn't make a difference if you were an American, if you were getting outplayed by a Spanish player or anybody else. That was it. You know, you might have been coming off the bench for the next game.
Right.
So that's why I felt like the Spanish league was probably the toughest and probably the peak of my career.
Cool. Okay. Hey, Jared, this is Akil. Hey, great to have you on the show. Now that you're retired, what is your current plan, and do you have any coaching aspirations?
Well, right now, for the last couple of years, I've been I've been over on the girls' side. I've been coaching high school girls down in Central Delaware, and you know, I've been doing that a little bit. I'm actually trying to crack into the sports apparel business, getting one of these Fortune 500 companies. It's a little tough now, but I still feel like I have a good chance in doing that. The coaching thing, probably on a higher level, it's not for me right now. But who's to say in a year, or you know, even in a month, you know, that may be different. But the coaching thing, I right now the high school level is cool for me. But who knows? That could change.
All right, well, cool, you know, get you out of here on this one. We're going to let you, if you got anything that you want to promote, like you can let us know where the school is, where you're coaching, or if anything else that you're doing that's related to basketball, you can let our audience know. And
I've just been, I'm down in Middletown, Delaware, and I actually did you know, run some camps and some individual work and you know, the website and Hoop Skills, and we just tried to do a camp and some, you know, some things that to try to help kids out as much as possible as far as workouts and different things like that, just trying to give back to the, you know, to the community as much as possible. So but you know, other than that, I'm just trying to crack into one of these big time companies. So, but I feel it's coming.
Since we're all from Philly, you know, we got a big following in Philly and in that area, Delaware, Jersey. So, if there is anything that you're ever doing, you know, camps, coaching, or anything like that, just let me know, and we'll put it out there on our website, our Facebook page, our Twitter page, and we'll shout it out on the show for you. But we'd like to thank you again. Like I said, it was really short notice that we got you on, and we really appreciate that. So we definitely got to do this again. So thanks for joining us tonight, Jared. All right,
thanks Jared. For having me.
All right,
thanks,
no
Jared.
Doubt.
All right, man. Back at.
All right.
Yep.
Take it easy.
All right. So that was Jared Stevens, Penn State alum. So moving right along, we got our final call of the night, a headliner, if you will, on the line. You people may know Mike from if you're from Philly, back in our day, like around 95, you know, 91 to 95,
He played at Abington Friends High School. And he went on to star at University of Pennsylvania with the Ivy League Player of the Year in his senior year. And he has a nice little resume that he's built overseas in the past several years. So without further ado, we're going to bring on to the line in the war room for the very first time our homie Mike Jordan. Mike, you there? Can you hear us? This happens every time, man. Somebody else pushing it?
Mike Jordan.
Mike.
You know, war room, brother.
What up?
All right, what up, Mike?
What's good? Hey,
Mike.
What's good, man? Same old, you know, just a different day.
I heard that.
All right, since we go out at 8, the rest of the time here is yours, but, you know, we're going to get right to it so you don't get shortchanged on your segment. So,
I got 8.
This is, huh? Yeah,
no,
we out of 8. So this is Dev, and I'm going to just – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jimmy. You got it.
I got it. Mike, what's good? This is Jimmy, fam. What's good?
What's up, Jim, man? Just chilling.
Hey, man. For our audience, let everybody know all the different places that you played.
Well, when I first graduated from Penn, I played all over Philly, and then AAU, we traveled all over the place, and then Abington Friends, and then UPenn. You know, I started my pro career with the preseason with the Sixers, and then I, you know, was in a preseason, I mean, summer league with the Sixers, preseason with Boston. Then I did a little short stint in France and Germany that year, you know, bounced around a couple places just to, you know, stay in shape, not in concrete. And then a year after that, I played in Spain, second division Spain, which is, pretty decent league. And then from there, I went to second division Germany, played about four years in Germany. And then I went to Italy, Belgium, did a short stint in Latvia and Greece.
You?
Then I did a short stint in Israel also, and I was right down in Ashkelon, which was right near the Gaza Strip, which was experiencing.
They gave you a helmet?
No, I wasn't on a helmet. I ended up getting released though, and I came home during the Phillies when they won the chip. So that was good thing to be home. And then I ended up getting assigned, you know, to go back to Germany. But a bulk of my career has been spent in Germany. But, I spent a little time pretty much, you know, in a bunch of different spots over there.
Yeah, I think pretty much not playing in the Gaza Strip was probably a good thing for you. So.
Yeah, I was close, you know, and it was crazy because after I got released, I think like that week, later that week, they started shooting the mortars over there and they started going home. So I was real happy to be home.
Yo, that's crazy. Hey, Mike, this is Kill. What's up, man?
What up, Kill? What up, baby?
All right. Hey, now I got a question for you. Was it a difficult transition adapting to the language barriers and cultural differences in these different places?
I don't think it was that difficult. You know, being as though that I had the opportunity to go to Abington Friends and Penn, I was exposed to all different types of people and all different types of stuff, you know. So, and then when I first went over, I went to Spain, and I took Spanish at Penn, so, you know, I could grasp it a little bit. And I think it's tough for some people, you know, but I think that I made a pretty decent transition everywhere I went. I mean, obviously, some of the languages are easier to understand, you know, and to pick up on than others. Had I played in Spain as much as I did in Germany, I would be fluent in Spanish. Like,
yeah, see, Mike, you were getting your learn on, I guess, in school, because I took languages too, but I was taking them for the grade, not to learn them.
Yeah. I mean, Spanish is one of the, you know, romance languages, and it's nice. It sounds nice. You know, it's not that difficult. German, on the other hand, is a little more difficult. You know, when I first got to Germany, I was shocked because, like, people would, you know, be saying, good morning, how are you? And it just sounded like you did something wrong, you know. It's like, yo, what, I didn't do anything. Like, you know, basically they're saying, you know, good morning, are you having a good day, you know?
Guten Tag.
Mike, this is Paul. What's up, man? What's going on?
What's up, Paul? What's up, man?
Not much. What are some of the noticeable differences between the style of play, say, in the U.S. Versus over in Europe, say, Germany, for instance? And, like, does the style over there fit your game well?
You have to, I think, to be successful, you have to adapt your game. And
yeah.
Each league over there is a little different. You know, I heard Jared and the other guys talking, you know, a little earlier about how, you know, in certain leagues, on certain teams, they play a certain way and you're expected to do certain things. So, you know, basketball is basketball, and you can see that, you know, the overseas guys are catching up with the NBA guys, you know, some of them, not everybody. But, you know, in some leagues, it's like France, for example, you know, that league is, you know, up and down. There's a lot of, you know, tweener guys in that league, you know, 3-4s, 2-3s, that just like,
yeah.
you know, they like to get up and down and go. You know, Italy, I thought was more, you know, in Spain, you know, I thought were more, Spain, second division, we got up and down. You know, I think in ACB it's more set up and stuff like that. Italy is like a little bit of both. You know, Germany, you know, is a different style also. But I think Germany is a little more for a, like a big bruising kind of guy than the other leagues.
Got it.
All right, this is Dev again. We talked about this the other day when me, you, and Kill were talking, but. You know, you always find cats out there who talk like it's easy to get a job overseas, and, you know, I'm sure that that's not really the case. But can you tell us about the level of competition in the EuroLeagues and kind of speak on the rules regarding the number of Americans that each team can possess? Because we've always heard
yeah.
that it was, but didn't they switch that or something?
Yeah, when I first went over, you were only allowed 2 Americans. You know,
right.
And then since then, the rules have changed. You know, they opened up the borders. At one point, you were allowed to have as many as you want, and then they, you know, I'm going to keep it 100, like the ball was kind of not good because you had all the Americans over there trying to get numbers and just playing real selfish, you know what I'm saying? And it was just like a glorified, you know, pickup game. So, you know, then they started putting it back the restrictions, and I think that in the German First League, you're allowed maybe, I think you're allowed 5 or 6, but you have to have 4 Germans on your team.
Okay.
And then I think in Italy you're allowed, you know, 5 or 6 foreigners. But, you know, now they make the rules that you have to have a certain amount of, you know, of the homegrown or, you know, that particular country's players on the team because they want to develop their young guys. Whereas, though, when they opened it up a lot, they were getting Americans a lot, like, really cheap, you know, because guys were just trying to get over. And it was taken away from the younger talent. So, you know, a lot of the countries came up with those rules in order to develop their younger players.
Let me clarify, though. Is it certain number of Americans, or is it just certain number of foreign players, period? Because I'm sure
foreign, yeah. I think it's
okay.
I can't, you know, don't quote me on this, but I think it's just a certain amount of foreigners that are, you know, non, you know, and I think foreigners count as non-EU. You know, I'm not sure how that works. But, you know, most of the guys that they bring in that aren't from, you know, that particular country, per se, are, you know, either, like, from Eastern Europe, from Yugoslavia, you know, Serbia, Croatia, those guys, and Americans.
Okay, cool.
Mike, this is B. What's up, good brother?
What's up, B? What's up, man?
Oh, man, I'm blessed and highly favored. Yo, we hear that some cats will go over to Europe and apply for that EU citizenship. What are the benefits of doing that? And I guess, have you ever considered that in your current situation?
You know, it's not that easy. You know, some people that can get it done, you know, for you. Some countries it's a little difficult to get it than others, you know. Back in the day, I think you had to get married in order to get it in some of the countries. But now, you know, I think there's other ways people go about getting them. You know, I can't really speak specifics because I don't have one. If I could do it all over again, you know, I would have definitely probably married me a Spanish girl, my first year over there.
Yo, that was my next question. I wanted to know, you know.
I mean, no disrespect to my wife or anything like that, but, you know, back then, just for the, you know, for the passport, I would have did that just for the passport,
benefit.
You know.
Yeah, hey, Mike, this is Jimmy again. You kind of brought up my question, man, and no disrespect. I know you're married now, but you weren't always
yeah.
married. So, you know, I had a question about the foreign box. Are the women over there the ball players is American women? I mean, the bottom line, how strange would a groupie get for a piece of change? That's all I want to know.
You know, my experience over there with the females hasn't, you know, I think it's a little different out in the States. You know, out here, you know, these chicks out here, you know, they poking holes in condoms and doing all kinds of stuff to try to get that check. You know what I'm saying? Over there, I think you have the girls that want to hang around you, that want to, you know, do things with you, do things for you because of what you do. But I don't think it's on that same. I don't think it's on that same level as over here. You know what I'm saying? Because you know, cats gonna come in and you know they in and out every year. Like Jared said earlier, you might not re up with that same team. You feel me? So it's like, okay. Yeah. So they're not trying to. They're not looking at it as a, oh, let me get rich. You feel me? You know, it's more like a. You know, I'm trying to have fun. I'm trying to enjoy myself. Whereas over here, it's like, all right, I just.
He's trying to come up.
Yeah, I just saw on a new he signed for $5 million. Yeah, I'm gonna get him tonight. You know, I'm gonna have his baby. So I think it's just a little different. I mean, like the bull said earlier, you know, girls that are you know all over the world are
pretty much the same.
I think it's just it's on a higher level over here than it is over there. I don't think you know anybody over there is trying. You know, I don't think those girls up there that are put in that category. To get, you know, pregnant and trapped guys as they are over here.
I heard that.
Okay. Hey, Mike, this is Kill again.
Yep.
And the next question has to do with, you know, a gentleman who was very integral in your life and mine in terms of developing our basketball careers, helping you become the player you are, and even allowing me to, you know, become a, you know, a low D1 college player. But how much did those John Harnett workouts shape your game and prepare you for a professional basketball career?
You know, those RIP, you know, rest in peace, John, but, you know, he was like one of my father figures, you know, and, those workouts were incredible, especially when, you know, I was coming up through them, you know, when the older guys were, you know, Alvin, you know, John Haynes, Doug Overton, you know, Aaron, you know, Eddie Jones, all those guys, you know, just going in the gym, watching those guys play, you couldn't help but get better, you know, and understand the game and they would, you know, teach you the game. So, you know, those workouts were pivotal, I think, to, you know, everybody that had the opportunity that were, you know, lucky enough to be involved with that. And, you know, it just it sucks that, you know, the younger generation, you know, won't have that, you know, won't have a guy like John that can, you know, keep them out of trouble and make sure, you know, that they become not just better basketball players but better people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. Hey, Mike, this is Paul again. Just traveling around University City. I see they put a big ass mural of you down on Penn's campus, man. Like when you first saw that, was that overwhelming to you? Like how is it when you see a big mural of yourself?
Yeah. I didn't know it was there until when I came back from overseas and somebody had told me. And so I had to go down and check it out. And when I saw it, I was like, "Yo, this is, you know, I was like, this is dope right here." And, you know, I'm hoping they never take it down, you know, because I'm playing with some incoming freshmen that's going to Penn now up in this league. And you know, so a couple of times I was gonna have to tell them, like, "Look, man, you need to do your history and check up on things. Go down there and check out the wall because
they're
gonna be looking me off on the break now."
They look you off. Tell them check out that mural.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, you're gonna have to not look me off, man. Like, come on, dog.
I hope the hooligans don't go down there and spray paint over the gym, man.
Yeah, I know, right? They might kill me, you know, spray paint on the gym, Tom. Because, you know, in Philly, you know, I think I might be the most hated hooper in Philly because I have no flash and no glitz and nothing like that. You know, I just go out and get it done. I'm real basic.
Basic ball. Yo, this is B again, Mike. What are your plans once you leave the game? Any aspirations to get into coaching? And how long do you see yourself playing?
My body feels good, you know, so. You know, I'm gonna try to, you know, milk it to the wheels fall off. You know, I would like to get into coaching. You know, my backcourt mate had just got the head coaching job up at Colgate, And, you know, I thought perhaps I would get on the staff, but, you know, he went a different route. So, you know, maybe it's not my time yet to get into coaching. So, you know, I'll go back over and try to make this change and keep playing, you know, getting paid to play. You know, you can't complain about that. But the body feels good, so, you know, I'm going to try to play till the wheels fall off. You know, don't tell my wife that, but, you know, I'm going to try to keep going. I'm going to try to keep going until the body tells me, you know, you can't go anymore or, you know, teams don't want me anymore.
True. I mean, speaking of that, when you're in Germany, because I know you were just over there, were you over there by yourself or the fam was with you?
My wife, she came over and she came over March the 2nd this year. She was working and she came over to have the baby. And, you know, she was over there and the baby was due April 19th and she was over there for 2 weeks and then the baby came. So, you know, we were lucky that she came when she did.
German hospital then.
Yeah. My baby, my little daughter's, I think she's German. She was born over there. So,
congrats to you again. You know,
thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Congratulations, homie.
Yeah.
I'm down that same road, so I'm going to be calling you, trying to figure out how you can change a diaper. So look out for my calls.
No doubt.
But, look, all right, because I know you've been getting it all your life. So I know when you went overseas, it was probably no different. How did the foreigners react to your name? You know, were they expecting more from you because your name was Michael Jordan?
Yeah, you know, it's the, like the same reaction that I got, you know, here, you know, as far as with the name, people expecting certain things. And before they see me and you call out my name, you expect the other guy to run out of the tunnel. And you see me and it's just like, you know, it's just like, But, hopefully throughout my years of playing, you know, I've kind of made a name for myself as far as playing-wise and, you know, people recognize the style of play, you know, and can respect that and not worry so much about the name. But, you know, it's been fun. You know, I wear 23 and stuff like that. So, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. When I was younger, it used to bother me. I stayed, like, as far away from 23 or anything, bald head, all that stuff, stayed away from it because, you know, I just didn't want to deal with the comparison. But as I got older, I started to, you know, not worry about it as much. And, you know, I got the bald head. I wear 23. The bald head is not, you know, something I do purposely. It's something I have to do.
Yeah,
you know, so I embrace it now, and I just have some fun with it, you know.
Yeah, I don't think Mike did it purposely either. Go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Mike, what's funny is I know I'll probably speak for all of us. A lot of times when talking about basketball, people don't realize that when you look at the years, it wasn't like you were named after him. He was nobody when you were born. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly. You know, I was born in 77. I think he was writing that bullshit letter y'all was talking about earlier.
So he probably in the 77.
No, he was writing that letter at the time.
He was writing the letter. Yo, he was getting his mush. He was getting his mush mouth on. How could she be doing this?
I don't know if that was real. That can't be real, man. Like he was in high school.
At least you can say that you're the smarter, more articulate MJ.
There you
that
go.
Was
you
bad.
Got the Ivy League
that,
education.
Yeah, that was bad, man. That's my man and all, but that can't be real.
Yeah, I hope not. Then Laney High need to be brought up on some charges. But look, man, we out of time, so we definitely gonna have to circle the wagons and do this again. But real quick before we get off the air, is there anything you want to promote? Anything you doing? Any camps? Anything with the kids?
I'm not doing any camps, man. I'm just on daddy duty right now.
Okay.
You know, maybe
in the
future.
What's your Twitter for the people?
Oh yeah,
at
MJ's 23. It's EMJAYZ 23. So it's not, you know, it's just pretty much MJ's 23, but it's spelled phonetically. So that's where that came from. And right. That's about it, you know. And they can like my little fan page that my homie made for me from Belgium. That's on Facebook also.
Okay,
we're gonna put all that stuff out on our page. And we'll put a replay and all that kind of stuff so everybody can hear it. But thanks for coming on with us tonight, Mike.
No, man, really, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Mike. All right, homie.
All right,
sorry,
bro. Have a good one.
Take it easy, Mike.
One.
All right, good looking out, everybody, for joining us once again in the War Room this evening. Shout out to everybody who had some input. Special shout out goes to Lou White, David Knowles, Jared Stevens, and Mike Jordan for sharing their experiences in our Overseas Baller segment. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for another great episode. Episode of the Blue Magic Radio, as we call ourselves. We'll catch you up on the hottest stories of the week in sport. So holler at us on our website and our Facebook page. You know what it is, warwithsports.com. Till next week, we'll talk to you.
We gotta set our own hour and enforce it. Champagne wishes and caviar dreams. A team that's getting cream. With shells and fish shells from triple beams. I clean. Living a life for rally. Packing 50 calories. Rocking lizard valleys. While we do a drug deal in a dark alley. Up in casinos. Just me and my Dino Primo. Pushing Beamos in Pauly and Reno. With two Florentinos. Nas, he runs the whole staff. We count mass. The scene bass. We've seen half a Millie Jackson out there on the Queen's half. Three major players getting papers by the layers. And those that betray us on the block. They rock like Don Mateus. Fakers be used to shoot the targets. Soon as the darkest. Front on the drug market. Party zeros up in the carpet. Those are cheaters trying to beat us. We got hookers with heaters that'll straight popping. Put more shows in your top than Adidas. The leaders looking straight Tommy and our Giorgio Armani's. You want a homie and all you got to come get through a whole army. The Cielo rollers, money bowlers, tipping bowler, holding man payola. Slinging the coke without the cola. Me and Black don't fake jack, but we might sling one. It ain't no shame in our game. We do our thing, son.
Living a fast life, a fast car. Everywhere we go, people know who we are. A team from out of Queens with the American dream. So we're plotting up a scheme to get the seven-figure cream. Living a fast life, a fast car. Everywhere we go, people know who we are. A team from out of Queens with the American dream. So we're plotting up a scheme to get the seven-figure cream.
Yo, I got guns from Italy, smoke trees considerably. Mid-state and green, it seems, is where all my niggas be. The ghetto misery, shootouts and liquor stores. A perpendicular angle of the clout war. Police searching up my Lexo, but who's petrol? My tech blows straight off the roof to test your respect. Oh, but Joe don't respect me. It got me handcuffed, the rough life. I just be up night, breathing with scuff nights. Pour my beers for my peoples under the stairs. These years, I got their names in my swears. Robert twist out like it's my first child. Liquor shot, holiday style. Rockin' steel sweaters, wallaby down. 24 carats, counting cabbage like the Arabs. The marriage of me and the mic is just like magic. Elegant performance, bubble X full insurance. Guzzling Guinness, shooting, catching cases concurrent. It's knives, 700 wives, King Solomon size. We on the rise, me and G, ghetto wives, guys. The Luciano, Frankie Ayo, Bugsy Siegel. Green papers with eagles from a trade that's illegal.
Oh, you got to make it happen. This morning, yeah. But all you've got to make it happen. When you're living in the fast life.
Exquisite, yeah, yo, like a blizzard.
It's quiet, tire standing on ground with one pivot.
Two players rocking silk, blazers and diamonds like bracers.
Lands with name brand seats, reclining like a spacious.
Bodies on ice,
living tripe, rolling fixed up dice.
Gambling grand,
handling stamp
moves and shite.
My bank rolls, got the cops coming in plain clothes.
Trying to arraign a game because of a fame, that's how the game goes.
True.
Right out the slammer with the fame of glamour. Cooking up grams with armor, hammer, supplying scramblers in Alabama.
Rub out faces and leave no traces. My aces got mad body cases, preserved faces. At the horse races, serving as gone Viva Clico, Dimes with Magnifico, putting it cut in Saporico, heat for foes, shopping sprees with my fleet for clothes, and Caribbean sweet deep, ripping beats for flow.
Hey yo, we went from standing on blocks, went out to stocks, selling rocks, to picking up stock, and both docks with Glocks, and got poppy seed fields, with $1 million bills, packing on the blue steel, we keep the real inside the battlefield.
Yeah, so here's a toast to the funds and things, gun smokes and rings, graveyards is buried with kings,
kings, kings. Living a fast life with fast cars.